This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
So does the number of trans people who suffer from these kind of disorders surprise you at all?
To be honest, not at all. The majority of my friends are trans. We kind of tend to stick together, which I think is nice. But they're also majority. I mean, I genuinely can't think of a friend who is not mentally ill in some way. It is just so apparent in our communities, and I have a lot of feelings about that, where it came from. But yeah, it's just definitely no surprise there.
With your understanding of the trans community and your friendship group, does it feel patronising at all to have these numbers being called staggering and alarming by the media outlets that are reporting on it?
I could feel how it would, but also I feel like to a lot of people, that would be something that would shock them. A lot of people don't even know that we exist. I feel like, I mean, before I came out, I had no idea about the wonderfully vibrant, beautiful trans communities that are out there. So I think it's kind of important for people on the outside finally see some kind of concrete evidence that A, yes, we exist, and B, we're having a really hard time.
What do you think, from your experience, has the biggest impact on the mental health of young trans people?
Okay, so young trans people in particular, I am a kindergarten teacher and I'm studying to work in primary schools as well as an educator. And we spend a lot of time looking at diversity and inclusion and things like that. So I remember in my childhood, the biggest factor that would lead to my self-doubt, low self-worth, low self-esteem, was the fact that I could not perform masculinity in a way that was expected of me. I remember, you know, as a kid, trying on dresses with mum and my sister, but having to hide the photo evidence from my dad's, which kind of put me in this weird position of being like, okay, I really enjoy doing this thing, and it's not harming anyone, but also it's going to make someone really angry and upset with me. And I think just that overall understanding of I don't fit into this world has such a huge impact on how you view yourself and your place. So I think harshly enforced binary gender roles would be, I think, one of the major factors. Also the fact that in communities which are disadvantaged or peoples who are oppressed, there is a higher tendency towards mental illness, yes, but also a higher tendency to being subjected to abuse, things like domestic assault, intimate partner violence. There's just all those sorts of things which then can lead to drug abuse, poverty, and then you've got, of course, we need to be conscious of all the intersecting marginalisations. So, you know, you've got trans people of colour who are subject to even more horrible things. So on top of being trans, they have to deal with racism. There's a lot of trans disabled folk as well who have to deal with a lot of things. And when you pile those onto each other, you just end up with this incredibly messy web of a lifetime of rejection, and just that is not good for the human psyche.
Even without those other intersections, mental illnesses tend to be comorbid with each other anyway, so you really can see that pile-on effect. In your role as a kindergarten teacher, you have sort of a unique perspective on childhood gender identity and things like that. Do you see much of that enforcement of the gender binary in the children that you work with? Do you see them trying to break away from it? Do you see any changes from when you were a kid?
I see all of that stuff, and sometimes it's the most wonderful, amazing thing, and sometimes it's the most damaging and, like, makes me not want to go on anymore. I genuinely see it taking hold as soon as children are able to express themselves. I'm talking, like, 2 or 3 years old. You can see the effects of media, parents, the government, all this stuff. You can see it 100%. So, for example, a couple of years ago in my kinder class, I brought in a whole heap of superhero costumes that I'd found on the side of the road, but they were in perfect nick. Brought in these superhero costumes for the kids. They all loved it. And then I had a couple of girls come up to me and said, oh, why don't you have any girl costumes? And first of all, I was like, well, you can be a superhero 100%. Please definitely be a superhero if you want to be. But then I was like, also, no, like, let's get some dresses. So I sourced a whole heap of beautiful dresses and naturally, here's the thing. Boys love wearing dresses. I'm sorry. Like, any boy would love to wear a dress. So comfortable. They're so pretty. So cute. Love it. Fun to swirl in. So I had these two boys that would always wear dresses, and they were fine with it. Obviously, their parents were very supportive, and that was great. But then I'd have this other little boy, and he was kind of the jock kid. He was kind of like a little bit the naughty kid, you know. But I caught him one day trying on a dress behind a bookshelf by himself in the corner in the dark. We caught eyes, and he had this intense look of shame on his face. And I just went up to him and was like, "Hey, I love that dress. You look great." And it just killed me how much he thought he had to hide it. And I see it all the time. That happens so often.
It's really terrible how young that starts.
It is. And I can literally see mental illnesses forming because I've had that same experience. I know what that's going to turn into, and that's going to turn into a hatred of self, and that's never good.
So once those problems start forming at that extremely young age, which is horrifying, the report has also made note that it's much harder for trans and gender diverse people to access adequate mental health. Have you had any experience with therapists? How have they dealt with your gender identity?
So I first saw a therapist about 5 years ago, but that was well before I delved into my gender stuff. That was very deeply hidden. And so I don't think that experience was 100% what it could have been if I was aware of myself. I've had about 3 or 4 letters to different psychologists sitting on my bureau for a year now. This is the thing with following up mental health. It's so hard to do. When you spend maybe like 90% of your time lying in bed, it's so hard just to get up and get the energy and the motivation to be like, yeah, let's fix this stuff. Like, it's going to be great. It's just so hard to do, and extremely hard to explain that to people who are mentally well or neurotypical, that it is really hard to follow up on this stuff. And I think there needs to be more support for people who are struggling to access these services. And I know you can call Lifeline, you get 10 free sessions with Medicare, so on and so forth, but getting to the GP and they misgender you all the time, they use your dead name. Finding a trans-specific mental health professional also is incredibly difficult. And when you do find one, they're fully booked out, they're not taking new patients.
I mean, even just trans-friendly is difficult to find a lot of the
time. Absolutely. And so often, so many of the people I've spoken to have been educating their psychologists on trans stuff. I think it's horrible.
Especially when you only have 10 sessions. You don't want to spend one giving them a trans 101.
Right? That's what we come to you for, to help us sort through our feelings. I'm so proud of all the friends I know who are going to therapy and like figuring this stuff out mostly on their own, because I feel like they're laying the groundwork for something better in the future, I hope. It's hard. You're going to develop more complexes and things when you're like struggling to figure out stuff that you don't really have a framework for.
And that's where community is so important. Having a network of other people who are going through the same thing. The report also had a little bit on what people would do when therapy wasn't working. And it said that we tend to use music and art and activism to make ourselves feel better. Do you have any hot tips for any trans people listening to help with their mental health?
So I spent a number of years, when I finished high school, I wanted to go to uni, but I got really poor marks because I was just so depressed and anxious throughout high school. I couldn't focus, couldn't do anything. Also, it turns out now I think I have undiagnosed ADHD, which would have really helped to have sorted when I was younger. But anyway, but after high school, I like had no ambition, didn't know what I wanted to do with life, and thought that I needed to have something to do in life straight away that was constructive and blah, blah. And I did a lot of experimenting. I got hold of a camera. I took lots of photos and like edit them on the computer. A lot of them I look back on now and realize I was trying to express some very deep emotional stuff that I had no other avenue to. My group of friends was honestly crap. Like, they were not supportive emotionally. When you're young, it's hard to know how to do these things. But yeah, anyway, so I took all these amazing selfies and like, yeah, edited them on the computer, like did like digital art. And I just thought they were cute and fun ways to pass the time and like maybe get some feelings out. But looking back now, I can see the progression of my mental health. I now have this album of photos of myself that are like now somewhat empowering. I was like, that was me taking control of my emotion and expressing it in a way that I could. I think a lot of us aren't given the tools to express our emotions. Emotion is such a vital part of human existence. It's the reason we evolved to where we are. Well, there's two main things from what I've gathered. Is our emotional complexity and also working together. The research I've done on human evolution and human society and how we all got to where we are, a lot of it is from our emotional responses to things and also working together as a team. So I highly recommend collaborating with people. If you have an artistic idea, get to another person who's got an artistic idea, get together, just throw it all together, see what comes up, and don't pressure yourself to have a perfect, beautiful, profitable end product. Just do something that makes you feel something. Writing is amazing. If you can write, write. I say poetry is a great place to start. Doesn't have to rhyme. Just get all your feelings out and then make sense of it later. Just honestly, just do. Just if you can't think of something to do, go out, buy a pencil and a bit of paper and just draw something. I don't know. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just get your feelings out somehow, you know? Scream in the middle of the street if you have to.
Can you take us through what it's like when you're in a circle of friends, most of whom are trans, most of whom are mentally ill, mm-hmm. knowing what our rates of suicide are like? Is it concerning? Do you have to be on higher alert? How do you cope with that?
To be honest, and I actually kind of want to cry because I'm about to say this, but I think in our circles it's very easy to switch that stuff off because it is so present all the time. There is a threat of one of your friends potentially ending their life. Particularly since I've really joined in with the trans community, it is not at all uncommon to have a friend who is suicidal. I've spent some time looking after people who have been suicidal. It runs in my family. I myself have grown up with suicidal thoughts as the backing to my life. The thought of ending my life has just always been on the table. When you're so far removed from what it means to be human or what has been defined as human, we basically have been treated like sideshow attractions, monsters, freaks of nature. Not living just sometimes seems like the easiest thing to do, you know? But that said, I have found so much beauty and love and support in people who have suffered similar things to me. And I genuinely think at least my reason for living now is to provide that love and support back. That's my personal manifesto for why I want to keep going. But it's hard when you're all struggling with the same stuff and you're not getting the medical support you need. You're getting blasted by the government, by the media, by random people on Facebook.
Or on the street.
On the streets, at your work, at school, in your home life, from your family. Oh, it's just so much to deal with sometimes, but find your people, honestly. Psychs are great. Calling Lifeline, amazing. Really helpful sometimes. But getting together with someone who knows what you've been through and someone who you trust and feel that mutual love with, like, nothing can beat that, honestly.
Obviously, you found a lot of strength and solidarity in the community. Where mm-hmm. do you think the change needs to come from to help with our suicide rate, to help with our mental illness rate? If it all falls to the community to be supporting each other, that's clearly not working if yep. we're each other's only supports.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Where do you feel like it needs to start?
Honestly, it needs to start with the only logical thing I can think is our allies. A lot of people in our community hate that word because it has been used as a badge. It's been used as a way of seeming progressive and cool. But it's one thing to say you support someone, and it's a completely different thing to actually put in the hard yards to support that person. And this is something I'm learning through activism in terms of being anti-racist, for example. So I'm a white person. I am learning that I need to step up more and take on more of that burden so that the people who are suffering, who are structurally disadvantaged and not given platform, not given resources to deal with this. I have some resources. I have capital. I have sway in society, perhaps, that people of colour do not have. So I need to step up and take that responsibility. The same with cis allies. And particularly, I think, cis queer allies could be doing more. I know, I understand it's difficult to know where to start. It's difficult to try not to step on toes, not say the wrong thing. But all you can do is try. Look online. Encourage your allies to look online. There has been so much amazing stuff written by people who are expending incredible amounts of emotional labor to explain this stuff and what to do next. I think our allies are the first step. Second step, government. These people are ruling our lives. They need to, A, be aware of the problem if they're not already, which I think they are, and B, they need to step up their game. They need to use the taxes that we're paying them, the votes that we're giving them, to help our people. But they're not going to do that unless people who are voting for them, paying their wages, tell them. So allies need to get to the rallies. You need to sign the petitions. You need to call your MPs. But also, beyond government, because I have extremely low faith in government. So beyond contacting your government, allies, people who do not suffer these marginalizations, what we can do is give our resources, give money to people who are struggling. You can, honestly, you could hop onto GoFundMe and find 100 trans surgeries or mental health fundraising or housing, food, even just the basics. If you've got some spare coin, donate it. If you've got some time, if you're an events organizer, if you're a performer, see what you can do with what you've got. Like I said, humanity only got to where we are because we worked together. You know, we formed societies, we formed communities that built on each other's strengths and offered what we could. And genuinely, I think allies have so much to gain from getting involved in that process. Because personally, I identified as cis maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And since, the benefits for me have been immense because I've been able to recognize my own self. But I think there is so much love and so much understanding in these communities because of what they've been through that I think people who haven't had that experience have so much to gain from witnessing and being a part of that. There is such a huge divide between cis and trans socially. I think it's time to start knocking down those walls, and that burden shouldn't be on the people who have been suffering at the hands of their oppressors. It's extremely complex, and I don't think we're going to have all the right answers straight away, but all we can do is try. I mean, obviously, we're talking to trans people, so just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great. Just make sure you love yourselves and love each other and take care of each other, because at the end of the day, like, we're all we've got, you know? We're all in this together. Let's find a way to make it work.
Thanks so much for talking to us, Dove.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.